It's time for This Week in the Lakeville Journal. And if everything is working out, and this morning nothing has worked out properly, we should have both Cynthia and Janet on the telephone. Good morning, guys.
Good morning. I'm here.
Oh, the tide has turned.
Well, at least this worked.
Oh, good.
Congratulations.
It always works, I think.
It was one of those mornings where we got window updates last night and on all the computers. And then what the new Windows updates do is you have to then assign privacy to our – we don't have an outdoor network. We keep all our archives on hard drives right here. We don't – so anyways, nothing was connecting with nothing today. So
nothing from nothing leaves nothing. I think that should
right.
be
but,
your end
But
of
we
song,
do have the paper, and we can talk about the stuff that's in the Lakeville Journal
But before you do that, I want to throw a shout-out to James Clark, who is our amazing person within our office who does so much, and he is our hero because we never have to think about stuff like that. James always figures it out and makes it seem so easy. So thank you to James Clark.
Well, it's funny. Whenever I get the message, contact your network administrator, I shout at the computer, I am the network administrator.
Yeah.
There's no one else to contact. All right. Let us go to the front page. You've got the vote on May 4th for the Region 1 school budget. The information is there.
And it's almost hard to believe, but we're actually voting in person, which is very exciting. For the Region 1 school's budget, it's at your town hall May 4th, noon to 8 p.m. So not 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., not 8 a.m. to 6 p.m., noon to 8 p.m., and a fairly quiet budget year. Even Marshall Miles seems pretty content.
I'm as content as one can be.
I mean, it's a lot of money. It's $60 million we're looking at here, so people should definitely go out and vote. But we do feel that the schools have done an extraordinary job in the last year of continuing through very difficult circumstances, remaining open and calm through the whole thing, very low infection rates, which is astonishing. So I do feel like it's a great year to vote in support of the hard work that they've done.
It's funny. I don't mind the school budget spending money as long as they're transparent and open about it. And that's the whole difference with this. I mean, there's not much you can do right now with declining student population, everything like that. But they've been very open on not only the COVID but everything else. So they've done a very good job. They've brought sunshine into the process, which is, you know, I think most people, that's all they want. They just wanted an understanding of what's going on.
Great.
Nice story because spring is here. Even though we've had wild weather in the typical spring, but you've got pictures of animules.
And Tabitha Mufuchi, speaking of computer geniuses, the daughter of visionary computers David Mufuchi, holding a llama. Those little babies are big. Patrick, very cute, funny little story about an annual occurrence, the arrival of the baby animals brought by their mothers and the stork. I think this year we have all lambs and goats, but a super adorable story and very excited to see that the students returned to school just as the babies were being born so they could participate in the annual rite.
All right. You've got a story about a movie being shot in Salisbury, a tornado in Amenia, a tornado in Kent. I mean, anyways, the big winds from Hollywood and possibly a tornado or two.
We usually fly pretty low under the radar up here in the tri-state region, and this has been a year of a lot of media exposure for us, not only in talking about real estate sales, but also the stories in the New York Times and Wall Street Journal about Millerton and the sort of the change in population there, some of which has brought some pushback from longtime Millerton residents. But so we had TV crews up here filming the damage from the storm and trying to decide if meteorologists trying to decide if the storm as it hit Kent, which got hit very hard, was actually a tornado, although they said it doesn't really matter. Wind is wind, and it's very destructive whether or not it's a tornado. Definitely a tornado in Amenia. But we also had a movie that was being shot on Main Street in Salisbury last week. And if you just drove by and you kind of leaned out the window and said, what are you doing? They'd say, oh, we're making a movie, but we don't know what it's called or where it's going to show. But Patrick Sullivan did the professional thing, which was to go up and find the person in charge and say, you know, what's going on? Who's the director? Who's the actors participating? And they said, could you please leave? So we have no actual information on what's happening. We did hear rumors that it's a Katie Holmes film, but that's all that we know.
All right. You know, the interesting thing about those tornadoes is it's all part of the same storm. The tornado that hit Amenia was a Category 1, which had winds of 100 miles an hour. It stayed on the ground 6/10 of a mile. that same storm and that same circulation is then went on to Kent, where it was a category zero, and the difference between zero and one is the highest winds were in Kent were 85 miles an hour. But the National Weather Service is very good. They were out here the next day, and they did all to let us know, and they said that this is the earliest ever for a tornado in Connecticut, earliest time ever. And we're getting to be pros at this. Not only do we have tornadoes, we have tropical storms, we have everything else.
Yeah.
So we're getting used to all this. Yeah. Budgets, town budgets, and your headline is right. It's worth paying attention to.
It's worth paying attention, even though it seems so incredibly boring, but it's not. This is the most important thing that we do. This is how your tax dollars are being spent. And to a large degree, this is what's so wonderful about the tri-state region, or especially Litchfield County, is taxes are fairly moderate compared to other places in the world. But nonetheless, we're talking about a lot of money, and the Region 1 budget specifically, we break it out and explain how the Region 1 budget works, because it's a complex system of local schools and regional schools and shared services, but also just explaining like what a mill rate is, and especially as we have new people up here who maybe this is their first time going through the tax process, it's good to have a little understanding of what's going on.
You know, we are so lucky here. I mean, the state of Connecticut is down to a very low percentage now. Just yesterday in Torrington for Housatonic Valley Regional High School students and other high school students, there was a special vaccination clinic that ran it from 3 till 6 o'clock. And coming up in Falls Village on May 3rd, residents who are 16 and older also now have an opportunity to get vaccinated.
And my daughter, who got the shot in North Canaan, which was supposed to be the single shot Johnson & Johnson a couple weeks ago, I think they're getting their second shot on May 5th, although we haven't had any contact from the organizers, so I'm a little nervous about that. But we also have on page A2 information about a clinic just for Salisbury residents. We're trying when we can to get these clinics into the paper. We try to get them on Instagram if we can, if it comes in late. But often these are complicated clinics. We get the information in print if we can get the information before we go to press.
All right. One of the things that crossed all of our desks was a letter from Curtis Rand about a cell tower that is possibly planned for actually Lakeville, right behind the Wake Robin Inn. And I just smile because there's a trial balloon flight for the proposed cell tower. And back when WKNY was originally WKZE was originally planned by Warren Gregory, there was going to be an antenna in Salisbury, and we did a balloon flight then. But back then, some 35 years ago, it wasn't a weather balloon. It was Bozo the Clown. That's a true story. That's a true story.
How high did it go up?
Well, let me put it this way. It went up, and it was obvious that the tower was going to be very obvious, so Bozo came down very, very quickly.
Well, so we're talking here about a proposed cell phone tower in Lakeville on the property of the Wake Robin Inn, which is it's a surprisingly large property. There are a lot of trails there behind the hotel. The hotel continues to operate, but on a very closed, kind of a quiet basis. And Shafin Sharif, who's one of the owners of the hotel, had contacted us and said, you know, just FYI, we're talking to the company. So what's happening here is because this is privately owned land, it's a slightly different process than if it's on public land. Down in Kent, there are two properties where AT&T is also looking at putting towers. I think they picked a one on Richards Road. The siting council gave approval for that, but there's already litigation in opposition to the approval. So these things can take a long time. But it's very, you know, there's a very strong pro and a very strong con, which is the pro is the one in Kent and the one here in Salisbury would both be adding coverage for areas that are very underserved. The con is that people do feel that, you know, they have a lot of concerns about the aesthetics, but also about health issues. So the siting council will have its public hearing at the end of June. We have the docket number here. You can send in your comments. You should definitely go to the website for the state and find out where you can see the trial balloon, which is now going up May 3rd. I believe the weather date is May 4th. We have something on our Instagram. We just posted also on our website, so you can get details on that. But do really go out and take a look. And
Don't go on the property, because this is private property. So you're going to have to view the balloon like it should be viewed, from your neighborhood, from wherever you're concerned, whether you can see a tower or not.
That's the Appalachian Trail.
Yeah, that's the whole thing about these balloon floats. Yeah. Cornwall got through a lot of business at their Zoom meeting.
They get stuff done in that town, I'll tell you. So they had their public hearing, they had their town meeting, not for the budget. They approved the sale of a small piece of land to William Betts, the artist, who I guess is local. I didn't realize it. He's from here. And he had bought Barbara Farnsworth's bookstore and is planning to do some stuff. There's a lot going on in West Cornwall. And this should be a very exciting summer if some of it or all of it comes to fruition.
Now, North Canaan is going to have their budget hearing on May 19th. Sharon having their budget hearing tomorrow.
Right. Lots coming up. I think Kent is having one, too, and it had been canceled because of the storm. They're rescheduling. So we are trying to get those dates in as we can. But if you're unsure about your town's budget dates, go to the town website.
That's one thing. You can find that information right there. The Salisbury spending plan, by the way, was approved on an online meeting as well.
Right. I think they were the first. And so they, I believe, took up the governor's offer, which was, they tried to be as transparent as possible, that make sure everybody knew the numbers, make sure everybody had a chance to comment, but they approved it not at a town meeting, but at a selectman's meeting.
Yeah. Got a nice little story here on honoring James Mars in a ceremony May 1st in Salisbury.
Right. The Salisbury Boys School has been doing a lot of work on diversity and local individuals who maybe came from an African-American background or other backgrounds. And they're honoring James Marr with a witness stone in Norfolk on May 1st at 2 p.m. And it's going to be quite a big ceremony with Johanna Hayes, Marie Horn, Kevin Witko. So it should be really interesting and should be quite moving.
All right. Now, this, not too soon to start planning for the beach, Cynthia?
Well, you know, part of the reason for this was that we found this beautiful old photo of the Grove. We've had all these great old photos, which we'll talk about more when we get to page A7. But, boy, who doesn't want to start thinking about the Grove already? And so they still don't really know at most of the town beaches, as far as I can tell, what the protocol is going to be. But especially for people who are coming to town and are new, you know, each town has its own public swimming facility. Not all of them have a lake. But you can go to your town website, look at the Recreation Commission, and they should have information. Salisbury doesn't know yet whether they'll be letting people in from other towns. Last year it was close off to non-Salisbury residents. So keep looking. We should know by the end of this month.
Thanks. Now, Lionel Hawkins got an interesting story out of Cornwall addressing concerns about the influence of the North, the Council of Governments for the Northwest Hills, which has evolved and changed and became a little larger and hopefully carrying a little more clout in Hartford. But there's people that definitely do have concerns about that.
Right. And interestingly, Gordon Ridgway, the longtime first selectman of Cornwall, gave some history on how the COG was formed. And so Connecticut moved away from county government. And as a result, some 9 towns in the northwest corner decided to come together and do regional planning. And if you've ever been to a COG meeting, it's very interesting. And they definitely, very helpful. I'm actually always surprised by how little each first selectman knows about what's happening in its neighboring town. So that often I'll say to a first selectman, oh, they're doing that in Salisbury now. And they'll say, like, oh, really? So the COG meetings are a chance for those first selectmen to get together. And a lot of what they do is they share grants so that there are state and federal grants that become available. And the head of the COG will say, okay, there's this money available for rural minor collector roads. Who wants it this year? And then they'll help them with this voluminous amount of paperwork that has to be done. Recently, because of more regionalization, the COG was expanded to 21 towns. It's very much a regional organization. One of the concerns that the Cornwall residents had was that it has too much of a regional agenda. You know, that's why we have town government, is so that you can promote your town government agenda. The COG is specifically a regional organization. But, you know, some questions about, they'd like to see the finances and stuff. So Rick Lynn, who was the head of COG for many, many years, has just retired, and I believe they had their executive session meeting last week to decide who the next head will be. It's possible it will be Jocelyn Eyre. Patrick is looking into that. We should have a story on it for next week.
It's an interesting problem, but you need the clout in Hartford. There's a priority that if you have more numbers, and you can go to Hartford with a much better clout than going as small towns. So COG has changed over the years, but it's gotten bigger. But I still think it's one of those necessary things because we just need that. We need the voice of 21 as opposed to the voice of 6.
Right, and it's good for them to have a sense of what's going on in other towns just so it makes more sense when things happen in our town.
Now, Lyle's got another interesting story, and it always interests me because I have some pretty bad knees, and that is a way long of preventing falls.
Right, and a very good article from Leela, who is over 35, as we say, yeah. Kent Memorial Library, doing fall prevention. You can't do too many stories on fall prevention. It's just such an important topic. Simple things, just like having better lighting, and as she points out, one of the things is just accepting the fact that you're older and that it's a little bit harder to navigate your house. So really a lot of useful tips there. And I want to jump back to the photograph.
I was going to say, yeah, we're going to go back to that. That's excellent, yeah.
It's really great. And, we had run some photos of an old tennis match a couple weeks ago, and boy, did we get response on that. And we've already had 2 emails from people about the Salisbury Antiques Fair. I guess it was actually a flea market. I'm not really sure technically what it was. But we have some tons of great photos, and I'll try to remember to get some of those on Instagram this week.
And nice.
Also beautiful horses, like the two faces of horses in the northwest corner, which is the very formal competitions, but also the Goshen Fair and those big, brawny, muscular, so beautiful horses pulling slabs of concrete.
Now, on the very next, right after that, you've got a nice little Discover Millerton section.
I'll let Janet talk about that.
Yeah, sure. We have in the past done Discover sections that we did as separate tabloids, but In this time where things are still opening up, we thought it would work best to have it inside the paper, so it's available there. And Whitney Joseph has done a great piece on the evolution of Main Street in Millerton, and we have Ed Downey, who is the head of the Historical Society in Northeast and a practicing attorney, of course, in the village of Millerton. He writes about Millerton's historic architecture, and if anyone has ever walked around Millerton at all, which is a great place to take a walk, you do see all these houses and wonder about the history of them. So Ed enlightens us on that, and Whitney will have a multi-part series on this that will continue next week and the week after. And do look at the advertisers in this section and support them.
All right, I want to go on to, before we get to Compass, the opinion page, your editorial, what will these newspapers be next? As someone who formed a 501c3 13 years ago by myself without any help, it's quite a process to form a 501c3 and move forward. The application process is lengthy. But it looks like you're going to go that route.
Well, this is what we're writing about. We've been researching it for 2 years. We talked about it after we did our first, what was then a membership model, and this last year was a contributors model. So we have gotten support from the community, and we have heard from people who felt that they wished that they could get a tax benefit from supporting us. And there are other reasons to try for this as well, in that there are grants available to nonprofits that, especially for media, that we don't tap into now, and actually it's NPR stations who generally get them because they are all nonprofits. And so for newspapers that are small like ours, there are many across the country still, but many more have closed. So we're looking for a way to address that problem, and it's unusual for a small entity to do this. You know, the Salt Lake Tribune did it a couple of years ago and gave hope to other papers who are now attempting that as well. But this is new, and it's a different thing than starting up an NPR station where the model was already there. And I know it can be onerous to do all the documentation, but we are approaching that as a possible next step for these papers and maybe for other small media outlets across the country as well.
As an individual that formed a nonprofit to take over the local access channel originally, it took me a month and a half, 45 days, to get the application together and to write it. Then I got a few other non-for-profit applications, and it was a 3-month process.
Oh, well, that's better than we think ours will be. When the Salt Lake Tribune earned its nonprofit status, they were approved. Their process was 6 months, and that was the shortest it had ever been for a newspaper. It usually had been more like 2 years. So, you know, we'll see how this one goes. We certainly don't expect 3 months. We would be hopeful maybe 6 months, but it's, you know, because we're doing some things that are not what small outlets have done before, we expect it to be longer.
And then the kicker to it, an attorney who I knew back then said to me, now, once you get this filed, it's going to take forever. I got my approval 1 month after I sent it in.
Why did they think it would take forever?
Because there's so many at the time I was doing it, there were so many, especially media corporations that were going over to 501c3 because of cable access and everything like that.
So
it would be like a backlog. I was lucky. If you can do it in 6 months, boy, that's moving pretty fast.
Right. And as I say, that would be a best case scenario. We would say, you know, anywhere between 6 months to 2 years, but we're determined and we're going to try it. And at least we can say we did. If it does not work out, there is always that possibility that you don't get approval. Yeah. But we're trying. And you were able to do it. But, of course, that was a system that was already set up for radio stations.
Yeah. So we only have about 3 minutes left, but there's lots of letters once again, lots of viewpoints, lots of columns and everything like that. So once again, your barrage of letters continues.
Right, and we're happy about that. And each one has some really interesting information. Don't miss Dr. Kirsch's letter on the intensive care unit at Sharon Hospital. And we, of course, have housing letters, one from Frank Fitzmaurice and Sharon about Eversource getting it right this last storm, and much more.
All right, Cynthia, you have a minute and a half for Compass.
That's forever. We have a ton of stuff going on. It's incredible that there's still a quarantine. Which I guess will be lifted in a couple weeks. We have art opening at a new gallery in Falls Village. We have another story next week with a little more detail on what's going on. Open studio with the wonderful Tilly Strauss, who we adore. The Philharmonic comes to Robin Hood Radio. That is big news. That will be super pleasant for many people. Edwin Frank from the New York Review Books did really the best summary of a poem I've ever read. Proud Songster by Thomas Hardy. We have Innisfree is opening to the public, and they have their daffodil showing this week and open to the public. Ed Furman continues to write for us interesting streaming programs you can watch that are based on books that he's loved. More Baby Animals, because you can't have too many at this time of year. Alvia Genu has the annual Plant Start sale coming up, but of course the baby lambs and my friend Michelle Alfandari and Doug Ptolemy have teamed up. This is a very interesting program, Homegrown National Park, where they talk about the importance of getting rid of non-native invasives, but also really bringing in native plants that support the environment and biodiversity. So that's our compass.
And that is this week in the Lakeville Journal. Of course, you can find them at tricornernews.com. Also, at pickup locations throughout the area and home delivery. Guys, we'll speak to you next week.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Take care. That is this week in the Lakeville Journal here on Robin Hood Radio. And you can find them one other location as well. That's robinhoodradio.com. Click on demand. Click on this week in the Lakeville Journal.